This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Ringgit and Cents, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanisan. Have you taken on a side gig to supplement your income? Well, if you have, you might want to pay attention because it's that time of year again. Nope, not the holidays, it's tax season. And you've got till the end of April to get your e-filings in. So, what income is taxable and what isn't? I'll discuss this right now with Tani Malay, Managing Director of Tani's Tax Consulting Services. Tani, thanks for joining us again on Ringgit and Cents.
Thank you, Roshan. Thank you for inviting me again.
So, Tani, I think you have to start off with the definition of taxable income in Malaysia. What is it?
Taxable income will be income that, you know, income that's of an employment nature, your rental income, you know, any form of income that you receive other than capital gains or gift. If you've got anything that you've received on a personal basis, on a gratuitous, where somebody is actually giving it to you personally without expecting anything back in the form of a gift, say your parents, your relatives, your friends give it to you, then that's not taxable. And also the most important thing is capital gains is not taxable. Now, what's the difference between capital gains and income? Income will be something where you are actually make, you know, you go into, say, for example, business income, where you go in with an intention to make a profit, whether it is a one-off transaction, whether it is multiple transactions that you undertake on a regular basis, it is all income. So that is it. The number two thing you got to also bear in mind is when we distinguish it with capital gains, capital is where you will buy an asset, you will buy something and keep it, or perhaps, you know, you keep it for a period of time with the intention to realize a gain in the long run. That is, for example, you buy a property, you keep it for 2-3 years or 5 years, and then you sell the property. Whereas if you were to buy, you know, the shares or you buy properties on a regular basis and then you sell that, you know, on a regular basis, let's say you sell it within 6 months if it is a property or a year, and you do this on a regular basis over a 5-year period, you buy 5 properties and 10 properties on a regular basis, then that will be subject to income. That will be subject to income tax. Whereas if you kept that same property for 5 years or 3 years later or 4 years later, and you had no intention to sell, but someone comes along and says, you know, he wants to buy it from you, you are living in it, you're enjoying the house or you're renting it out and earning rental income. Subsequently, when someone comes to you and says he wants to buy the property and you put it up for sale also, that will be capital gain. So you can make that distinction. One is the time, you know, for example, if it is property, how long you keep it, what is the income that you earn out of the property. If it is investment property, you'll be earning income out of it, you know, and therefore you maintain it with the intention of not wanting to sell it. But if you had bought something with an intention to sell, that's trading, you know. And even if you do something on the side, for example, here you are in employment and on the side in the evenings, you know, you've developed a platform and you're actually buying and selling products. For example, cupcakes. You may be actually getting somebody to make the cupcakes. You're selling the cupcakes. You know, you may be making just about, you know, 500 ringgits a month, you know, for example, 1,000 ringgits a month. Unfortunately, that is taxable because it will be caught. Because if they look at your bank statements, if they look at your credit cards, you are actually buying. The buying will be seen, the selling will be seen. So you can put the two and two together. But many people in Malaysia think that, you know, because I'm only earning about, you know, 5,000, 3,000 and 10,000 ringgits, it's quite small, you know, will I be caught? Maybe I can get away with it, you know. It depends on you. Yeah, some people get away with it, but that's not what I'll encourage you to do.
Tani, I have so many follow-up questions to that, but we'll start with this. Long story short, does that basically mean that all income is taxable in Malaysia?
All income is subject to tax. But what is income? You've got to distinguish it from gifts. You've got to distinguish it from capital gains.
So from my understanding of what you said earlier, it basically comes down to one intention, but two also, the minute you start doing regular trading,
absolutely.
So if I'm buying and selling sneakers as a regular basis and absolutely, I'm doing it with the intent to make money, that sounds like it's taxable.
Because you've already organized yourself with the intention to trade. You know, if you're going into that sort of a thing, you're actually receiving it as, you know, you're trading. But don't forget your other types of income, because you can have director's fees, you can have director's emoluments, you can have, you know, rental income, you can have, you know, interest income is one that you got to be careful, because interest income, if you're earning, in majority of the cases, will be exempt from tax because there's a specific exemption on tax. And also, if you're receiving any foreign income, for example, if your property is overseas, that is foreign source income, that is not subject to tax because Malaysia only taxes on income that arises in Malaysia. We call that Malaysia is territorial system of taxation. It's not a world scope of taxation.
So before we move on this point, I want to make this very clear. If I make 100 ringgit from a posting, say, on my Instagram, right? So I've got a sponsored post or something like that, or even 300 ringgit from gains I've made from sneaker trading, for example, that is taxable.
Absolutely taxable. Even casual income, for example, you give a speech and someone gives you 250 ringgit. You know, they give you a gift as though you think it's not a gift, because when you've gone there and you're regularly giving speeches and you're earning this 500, 300, 400 ringgit when you give each of those speeches, that is adventure in the nature of trade, and that is income.
And we shouldn't be fooled by the use of the word gift, right?
You've got to be careful. You know, it's not a gift because they're expecting something back, because they give you the 500 ringgits for speaking. That's the expectation. So they gave you the 500 in return for your speech. So effectively, you've given something back. Gift is something where you do not give anything back.
So, Tani, but there are forms of income that are tax exempt. What are they?
Basically, is, you know, your fixed deposits, you know, the interest income that you earn. You know, this is specific. And retirement gratuity, say at the age of 55, you get a large sum, any sum, it can be any amount. It can be millions, it can be hundreds of thousands. As long as you've worked with the employer for 10 years, etc., 10 years, then, you know, you'll be fully exempt. And there'll be also exemption, you know, if there's a compensation for loss of employment. Currently, last year, they increased it to 20,000 for each year. So if you are receiving, and if you worked somebody for 30 years, so 30 times 20 will be 600,000 ringgit, so that will be exempt, you know. And there will be other items which you then have to look at what we call Schedule 6 of the Income Tax Act. You've got to go in there, not too difficult. Go in there and check whether this, you know, there are different types of income that will be specifically exempt. You know, these are the common ones that I'll tell you. And for example, you know, if you're getting the health, for example, if you get any donations and things like that, that is also exempt. So look at Schedule 6 and also look at the basic principle of what is gift. If someone, your parents give you money, or if someone else gives you a gift and they don't expect anything, that's also exempt, you know. So you should be looking up all that. And also dividends. Remember, dividends are also not subject to Malaysian companies paying you dividends. You don't need to bring them to tax because it has already been taxed at the company level and it's exempt in your hands.
So, Tani, do I need to bother with tax-exempt income during my filing? Do I even need to...
No, you don't have to disclose it at all, because once an income is exempt, it's outside the tax. It's outside the tax ambit.
So I don't have to bother with...
You don't have to bother keeping records. You don't have to be bothered about anything else except that you have the proof that you've received money that is exempt. You know, it's exempt income. But when it comes to compensation for loss of employment, you've got to be careful. Make sure that the letters you receive, etc., actually makes it very specific that it is compensation for loss of employment. Because if you don't fall within that category, you don't get that exemption and you're going to be subject to tax on the whole amount of money that you receive, for example, on a voluntary separation scheme.
But there's also a floor for tax filing, right? Am I correct to say it's 34,000 ringgit after EPF?
There is a flaw. It depends whether you have a child, you don't have a child. You know, if you don't have a child, maybe if you're a single individual, it could be at that level, about 34, 35, etc. But if you have a child or two children, it's about in the 40,000s, you know, up to the 40 over 1,000. So somebody earning around about 4,000 ringgits a month, you know, roughly around about 3,800 or 4,000, you're not going to be subject to tax, or it's minimal taxation. Remember, the lower brackets are extremely low. It's like 1-2%, you know, so hardly you're paying any taxes. So in broad terms, I would say anybody earning less than 50,000 ringgit is not going to be subject to much taxes.
And that's income in general, right? We're talking about all the
after
side
gains
and all of that.
This is actually, I'm talking about 50,000, which means it'll be more than 50,000, because if you think about it, this is where we come in, you know. So it's not really... So anybody earning 50,000 after receiving all these reliefs, you know, you can be rest assured you're not going to be taxed, you know.
That's right. It. But just to take into consideration what we've talked about so far. So yeah. Let's say I make 20,000 ringgit from my full-time job.
You're right.
Right? I'm still below the taxable bracket.
You're well below.
But let's say I make another 20,000 from the side gigs and all of that. Now I start getting close to that taxable
bracket. You get closer, yeah.
And so once I start reaching an aggregate income in the 35 and above, yeah, that's when I should start...
Then you should start looking at, you know, looking at it and filing your returns. Remember, even if you have to pay like 100 ringgits of tax, you have to inform the tax authorities once you become... There is a section of the Act that requires you to inform them within the 30-day period that you have become a chargeable person. You have to voluntarily do that. They don't know. They're not going to come to you. But it's an offense if you haven't done that. And you then open a file reference number. And my advice is the sooner you open a file reference number, even if you do not have to pay the tax, is better. Because having a file reference number allows you to undertake all the transactions, because there are a lot of transactions where they expect you to have a file reference number. It gives you credibility too. So I'd advise you, even if you're not paying taxes, if you're close to the 30, 40,000, open a file number, keep it. It's useful.
It's better to be safe than sorry in this kind of scene.
Not only that, it also gives you credibility when you apply for credit cards, when you do other transactions. You know, they will ask you this, and it also shows that you're already a taxpayer.
So, Tanya, what about rental income?
Rental income, basically, very simple. If you got rental income, you are going to be taxed because you are not a business. You know, you don't have 200 properties. You have just got 3 or 4 properties. It's going to be treated as passive income. So for that rental income, you can offset against the rental income the quit rent, the assessment, the insurance, the maintenance charges, the repairs to that property, etc., if you're receiving rental. And direct, basically expenses that are directly connected to generating that rental income, you know. But you can't get, you know, tax depreciation. For example, if you were to put in a lift into that building, you can't claim tax depreciation on the lift, you know, because you are not a business. You're actually receiving it as passive income. So as far as I'm concerned, all the direct expenses, you can offset it, and you have to bring that rental income to tax.
All right, Tanya. So basically, when I look at how rental income is taxed, I take the aggregate income I get from the rental.
I get the rental income, the gross, then I less off the direct expenses.
Related to that property.
Related to the property.
So Tanya, if I'm making, let's say, 2,000 ringgit a month with rental income, that comes up to 24,000 ringgit a year. And that's the only income I have. Non-taxable?
Non-taxable.
I've been speaking with Tanamalai, Managing Director of Tanis Tax Consulting Services. After this, is your share income taxable? Keep it here to Ringgit and Sense to find out. Welcome back to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanesan. This morning, I'm speaking with Tanamalai, Managing Director of Tanis Tax Consulting Services, and we're talking about what income is taxable and what isn't. Tanya, a very hot question right now is going to be whether profits from share trading is taxable. Now, earlier you did mention it is, but maybe you could break that down for me, because what is the line between when it becomes taxable and when it isn't?
There you come to the question of intention. You know, did you buy the shares with an intention to trade? And trade means you're doing it on a frequent basis. The time period you keep the shares is very short. So you're effectively a speculator. If you remember, if you used to think about the word speculator, then speculator will be subject to tax. Whereas if you're an investor, a long-term investor, then you're not subject to tax, it's capital gains. What is the difference? It's a time, the period for which you keep the shares. So if you just keep it, you know, just say if you're doing on a regular trade, every other day, every other week you're trading, you're buying, you're selling, you're buying and you're selling, then you're clearly, you know, you are in the business of trading. So you're actually trading, in which case it'll be subject to income tax because it is income that you're generating. You're sort of organized already to do things on a regular basis. Whereas an investor would be looking at it, whereas you get a lot of people who'll actually buy shares, keep it on a long term, receive the dividends, wait for it to grow. There'll be ups and downs of those shares. So there, the fact that you have kept it for a long time and received dividends out of it, then you can actually classify that as an investment, you know, and therefore if it's an investment, the gain you realize in maybe 1 year, 2 years, 3 years down the line is actually capital. But the problem you have in Malaysia at the moment is the tax authorities are not consistent in taxing everybody who is actually trading. It's only the unlucky ones who get caught by the authorities who they pick up get actually, you know. But if you think about it, there are many, many Malaysians, especially last year during the COVID period when they were sitting at home, were trading, could be now subject to income tax because they were trading throughout the year on a regular basis. But this has been there from 1967. But unfortunately, the tax authorities have issued no guidelines, and therefore it's a matter of, you know, whether you are lucky or unlucky, you know. But as it stands at the moment, if you've been regularly trading, you are subject to income tax. That's it.
So Danny, there's some vagueness here, right, essentially. And I believe there is often this notion that capital gains, including share trading, isn't taxable. But it really comes down to the frequency here. It seems like that's part of the element here. Intention is another part there. Do you have a good rule of thumb here to help us determine the line between trading income and what is perceived as capital gains from a tax point of view?
I think to me, it's simple. You have to buy the shares and you have to keep it for perhaps maybe a year. And if you sell the shares, maybe a year or 9 months at the least, you know, and you receive dividends out of the shares, then it is capital. To me, you've kept it with the intention of not wanting to trade. But if you have done something more frequently, say within 3 months, you buy and sell within 3 months, I'm very clear that it is trading. Now, if you have kept, say, more than 3 months and less than 9 months, I would still argue that knowing that, you know, you're not dealing with it frequently, that is, you're not buying and selling, say, you know, more than 50 transactions, 100 transactions. If once you go into the 50, 100 and more than that, then it'll be income again. So it's a volume and the time frame.
But let's say I'm unemployed and net-net, the profits I've made from all the share trading come up to 30,000 ringgit. Again, it's below the floor, right?
No problem. You're not subject to tax.
Tell me, what is the consequence if I fail to declare all of my taxable income in the filing?
Consequences, you know, basically you failed, you underdeclared your, you know, your tax return is incorrect and you have underdeclared your income and it'll be subject to a minimum penalty of 45%. And it could go up to 100% if you don't go to court, you know. So minimum, you're talking about 45%. And nowadays the tax authorities, if you're a frequent offender, they're increasing the offense to, you know, but the penalty to 60% and 80% is not uncommon.
Now, Tani, we've got a few minutes left and I'd like to shift gears a little bit because we are a month away from the end of the tax deadline for e-filing in particular. What are some of your top tax filing tips to not only make this a good experience, but an optimal one as well?
I think first thing is make sure you have all the reliefs that you're entitled to claim. Please claim it, because if you don't claim it, it's going to be a gift to government. Secondly, whatever expense deductions like your books, your special relief, remember you got 2,500, another 2,500, so you've got totally 5,000. And if you're spending it, make sure you have the receipts. The medical expenses, you keep the receipts. For your parents, you keep the receipts. So you must keep the receipts, claim the reliefs, and make sure that you are declaring the correct amount of income. Get hold of the form EA from your employer. Make sure you have that in place too. And if you have received any other income, look at that income and say, is that income or is this capital? And distinguish it, because you may be receiving gifts which you may not be absolutely certain whether this is income or not. Distinguish that and ignore the gifts. Only bring in the income to tax.
So what happens if, let's say, my parents give me 1,000 ringgit? Is that a gift? Is that taxed?
It's absolutely a gift, you know, because your parents are giving out of your love and kindness. And
so it's intention again.
But if your parents are giving you 1,000,000 ringgit, my advice is it's still gift. but please get a letter. Please make sure it's documented, because gifts are so sensitive in Malaysia. At the moment, it's terribly sensitive. When you receive large gifts, the income tax authorities are always challenging you and saying, is that a gift or income? So you must get it in writing. Make sure you have the wording correct and they actually express the word love and kindness and they're giving it to you gratuitously and they are your parents, etc. Have it recorded so that tomorrow we do not have a dispute with the authorities.
Speaking of documentation, Tane, from my experience, receipts fade. So how long do we need to keep documents like receipts when we are filing
receipts,
taxes?
Receipts you must keep for 7 years. And let me go further and say, if you do not have those receipts, you've lost the receipts, then look for alternatives. You know, keep your bank statements, keep your credit cards. You can actually proof to them. Otherwise, my best advice to you is whenever you get receipts, photocopy it and keep it. Otherwise, actually scan it, keep it in your cloud. You know, you've got all these places to keep in the cloud. Please keep it in the cloud so that you can retrieve these documents. And authorities, customs authorities, the income tax authorities accept the soft copies of things and they accept, you know, the EE copies of everything. So this is acceptable.
So just get a scanning app on my phone and scan the document in there and keep it digitally.
Digitally.
Should I keep the photocopy as well? Do I need to keep
not
the physical?
Not necessary. Once you are comfortable that your documents are scanned and kept in the cloud and you're not going to lose it or erase it accidentally, then you're fine. You don't need to keep, you know, hard copies of those documents.
So, Tane, aside the receipts, essentially the point of keeping these documents is to prove that you filed for tax reliefs properly, right?
Yeah.
Are there any other documents that we should be keeping filed? So you mentioned the letter. Let's say I get 1,000,000 ringgit from my parents tomorrow.
Yes.
Keep that letter.
Yeah.
Any other documents?
No, for example, your capital, you know, income versus capital, for example. Mm-hmm. And if you want to say that's capital, inevitably the authorities, if the amounts are large, they will argue with you. So if you want to prove it's capital, for example, if you receive a compensation and you're actually asked to leave the job, you're asked to leave the profession and forever not be able to work, and somebody gives you a 10,000,000 ringgit, you know, as a matter of just keeping you out of your profession permanently, that's capital, that's not income. In which event, your documentation there is absolutely important to show that that is capital, you know, and the compensation they gave you is not income. So have that documented. So when you receive any large sums of money, you know, running into more than, you know, it depends on who you are. If you're a billionaire, 10,000 doesn't matter. But if you're an ordinary man, anything in excess of maybe 10,000, 20,000 ringgits, please have them documented.
On that note, Tani, always a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure, Roshan. Thank you.
I've been speaking with Tani Mele, Managing Director of Tani's Tax Consulting Services, and you've been listening to Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. I'm Roshan Kanasan for BFM 89.9.
Ringgit & Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.